A New Year's Eve Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on December 31, 1993, entitled Guilt, Pride's Last Holdout. The scripture readings are Psalm 130, Philippians 3, verses 1 through 14, and Luke 15, verses 11 through 24. The text for the sermon is Philippians 3, verse 13. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
Well, for just a few moments, think with me about a major human problem, and that is our tendency to hold on to our guilt and resist the word of God's gracious forgiveness. Guilt, pride's last holdout. I may not be everything, but at least I can be guilty. And it's all my own, and I'll hold on to it. Norman Vincent Peale died this past week. I guess it was last week, actually, because last Sunday's New York Times had a nearly full-page review of his life and his ministry. Certainly one of the outstanding ministers of our day and generation, who made a significant mark on literally millions of people. I knew a lot about Dr. Peale, although the height of his ministry was at the time when I was in high school and college, and the only thing I heard were from older pastors, the generation ahead of me, and most of the comments were negative. He was roundly criticized by those who spoke of him in my presence, and I think that my experience in the Reformed Church in America, in which he served, also was not unique. He came in for a lot of criticism, and the New York Times article indicated the fact that he was never apart from considerable criticism over the years of his ministry. Even though I had known some of that, I was surprised to read the review of his ministry to see how fully Bob Schuller copied his ministry. And Bob has always said that, but I didn't realize not only did he take the whole emphasis, his possibility thinking, reflecting Peale's power of positive thinking, but his whole approach, his whole understanding of the nature of the ministry and the church and what we ought to be about, and his reach out to those that were not ordinarily attracted to the church, all of that was so similar as I read it. And the other thing that was so very similar was the fact that he was so roundly criticized throughout his ministry, very much like Bob Schuller has been criticized within the circles in which I have run most of my ministry. I suppose you have to be some sort of a misogynist if you go into ministry anyway. Someone said preaching is hanging one's soul out on a line once a week, and anybody has to be a fool to subject oneself to that. You put your heart on a line, wear your heart on a sleeve, and get it trampled on regularly, and you probably don't go into this business if you're not sensitive in the first place. So in reading the review of Peale, I recognized what I know personally in Bob Schuller, really very ordinary and somewhat flawed individuals, sensitive, deeply hurt often. His book, The Power of Positive Thinking, was published in 1952, and he got a storm of criticism, as you might think. A theologian from Yale, William Miller, took him to task. The title of the book or the essay was, I think, some negative thoughts about Norman Vincent Peale. In 1955, 3 years after this book that exploded with tremendous success, still I think the most frequently published book after the Bible of any spiritual book, predating all of the present popular pop psychology and self-help stuff, 3 years later, 1955, he was ready to resign because of all the criticism that he received. He went to visit his old Methodist minister father, who said to him, "Don't quit, keep going." And he did, and he weathered the storm. But it just impressed me again about the frail and flawed people that God uses, and the nature of ministry, I suppose. And he did make his mistakes, as we all do, obviously. Maybe the most glaring thing that has come to light, which isn't anything, any new revelation now, but he had a high level meeting in the 1960 campaign. He was very concerned about a Catholic in the White House, for concerned about Vatican influence, that kind of thing, which he regretted later on. He supported Eisenhower and Nixon over against Adlai Stevenson, which caused Adlai Stevenson to quip, as he was wont to do, I find Paul appealing, but Peel appalling." So Norman Vincent Peale is dead at 95, died in his sleep, I think living out probably his own life, the best testimony to the gospel that he preached. But why I bring it up tonight is the fact that he was criticized within the church. He helped people beyond the church, but he had such criticism within the church because, as the New York Times article said, and as he recognized, he was accused of oversimplifying the gospel and of not dealing sufficiently with sin and guilt. And if you don't deal sufficiently with sin and guilt in the church, you know, you're in trouble, because the church lives on sin and guilt. If it wasn't for sin and guilt and keeping that whole thing alive, you know, I'd be out of business, right? We could close this place down or rent it out for something. So we've got to keep a strong sense of sin and guilt alive. We've got to keep people kind of hanging on, biting their fingernails. Because if we control the spigot of grace, then we got you see. And so Peale was criticized, as Schuller has been criticized, for not taking sin seriously. But as Peale said in 1952, everybody took sin seriously. He didn't really have to accentuate that. What people needed to hear after the war and all of that was the power of positive thinking, what a strong positive mental attitude can do. And for Peale, who was just a good old Methodist, he just loved Jesus and talked about Jesus. As Schuller as well will claim unequivocally that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But somehow or other in the church, we are afraid of good news and of a kind of a simple presentation of the grace of God. And I wonder if it's not because finally, if I will just receive the forgiveness of God as God's gift, which God gives because God forgives, because that's the way God is. If I do that, then really I can't do anything except receive that gift. I am reduced to having simply to say thank you. Now some of you don't have the problems that one like I have, being raised Dutch Calvinist, you know. The toughest thing in the world for an honest to goodness Dutch Calvinist is simply to be graced. I mean we would really rather do it ourselves, thank you. Oh, we talk a good line. We talk about grace. We talk about the righteousness of God that's ours and gift and all that. But finally, we would really sort of like to hold on to the reins, even if it means coddling our guilt for a while. I want to carry that guilt. I want to carry that guilt and let it fester and fume about my unworthiness, because somehow or other, that feels like religion. That feels like I'm being humble and serious with God. Let me suggest tonight that maybe our guilt, the unwillingness to let it go and accept the gift of forgiveness, is the last holdout of our pride. We take ourselves far too seriously, and the accentuation of our sin and guilt tends to be anthropomorphically centered. It tends to be me-centered. It causes an unhealthy introspection and finally a despair of myself, I suppose, but I'm all tied up in it. Rather than being released from this obsession with myself, freed to revel in the grace of God. The prodigal son in Jesus' story, and that story has so many facets to it, but just this little angle tonight. The prodigal son, when he got desperate, came home with a well-practiced speech. And will you notice that he really didn't want full restoration? That would have been too much, too bright. He couldn't quite contemplate full restoration to his place as a son. And so he practiced the speech. I think he thought about it for a long time. Now, if I do so and so and so, I'll come and I'll say so and so. And I'll get a place out back in the bunkhouse. And it's an awful lot better than I got it now. But you see, in so doing, what was he doing? Wasn't he really keeping the Father at arm's length? Wasn't he really insulating himself from the embrace of the Father? Wasn't he still holding on to the reins? Wasn't he still creating the scenario? And of course, it just all got dissolved in the face of that gracious embrace. He never got the speech out. He simply was hugged and loved and robed and ringed and sandaled, and they had a party. And in telling the story, incidentally, if you get the new book, The Five Gospels, I've got that now, and it gives you different colors for different, you know, whether Jesus said it, maybe Jesus said it, maybe Jesus didn't say it, certainly Jesus didn't say it. The only trouble is I'm colorblind. It doesn't help me a lot. But I know this, it's not in bright red. I can see the bright red. But I think it's in that category of Jesus probably said it. Jesus told that story, not as some innovation into Israel's faith, for the Psalms are full of praise to God for God's mercy. Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, if you should mark iniquity, who could stand? If you kept score, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, that we might stand in awe. Psalm 130. Beautiful, beautiful expression of a person graced who comes to the freedom to wait on the Lord with anticipation, like a watchman waiting for the dawn. And Paul. Paul, of course, the grace junkie. Paul didn't turn his back on all that he had experienced in the past. Paul wasn't making light of the fact that he was Hebrew of the Hebrews, the tribe of Benjamin, circumcised the eighth day, a Pharisee, keeper of the law, blameless. He wasn't making light of that. He wasn't saying that all of that was not good and important. He was saying all of that pales in the light of the experience of the grace of God, because I was trying so hard. In all of my religious activity, I was trying so hard. And it's never enough. It is never enough. And then you experience that word of forgiveness and that grace, so that he could say to those at Philippi, I haven't arrived, but this I do, I let go of the past, and I stretch for the prize. To be able to let go, just to be able to let go, just to be able to let God love you. Let this year, 1993, fade away as you kneel here, and whatever is on your list, let it go. Whatever things, rid of, would give you a truly new beginning, let them go. Don't coddle your guilt. Don't hold on to the past. Remorse, regret, failures, flaws, pains, hostilities, angers. Just let it go. Don't drag it into January. Let it go. This is the place. This is the time. It's over. It's covered. You can trust God with it. Let it go. And be new, be free, be graced by a God who would simply love, as in the beautiful picture, painting of Rembrandt, who would simply love just to be able to embrace you.